Welcome to Spielin' and Dealin', the Georgia High School Basketball Podcast. I am Kyle Sandy, the owner and founder of sandyspiel.com. And today is our GHSA State Championship Preview Podcast. We have broken it down from the very beginning, starting with bracketology, and now we are going to hit on every single game, of course. And we're going to do it in the order of the games will be played. So the order of which the games will be played, starting March 6th on Wednesday, working down to Saturday. Before we get into that, last call, everybody. Sandy Spiel Spring Showcase, March 17th at Gainesville High School. Still a couple spots open on the boys' side. We've seen a big flurry of that registration, so very excited. A couple players that will be playing for state championships will be in attendance. And, of course, the girls' side has been full for a while, but you could always register to get on the wait list. No charge if you are on the wait list, and you will be alerted if you are rewarded a spot in camp if you are on the girls' side. So that'll be March 17th at Gainesville High School. Girls start at 10 a.m., boys start at 4 p.m. More information available on sandyspiel.com. But today, the reason you are still listening, besides bulletin board material, which it sounds like my name has been popping up here and there and everywhere on the social media, on the post-game interviews, much appreciated, whatever helps your team perform the best. But let's talk about what we had going on in the Final Four. And remember, this is the last podcast. It is so crazy this time of year with whatever everything I have going on, you know, broadcasting the Final Four games. I'm going to have 2A and 7A. I'll be on the call for that on the NFHS network. So just will not have time to circle back and do a closing segment on these games. So this is the last podcast. This is the last time you'll hear my voice for a long, long time. But on the girls' side, we were 15 of 16. That is a hot 94% rate that we got correctly predicted. And on the boys' side, 13 of 16, 81%. Okay, everybody, let's get right into it. Day one, Wednesday, March 6th at the historic Macon Centerplex. Class 2A gets us tipped off. No, Class A Division 2, pardon me. Class A Division 2 gets us tipped off at 1 p.m. on the girls' side, as we see Green Forest, 26-5 overall, number one in the state, play the third-ranked team in the state, the Region 3 champs, Montgomery County, 30-1 overall. We saw Montgomery County beat Clinch County 61-57. They held on. Of course, they got 29 points from Marley Bell, their explosive senior, very athletic guard that is a double-double machine. We'll talk about that in a second. And, of course, 21 points from Amir Banks. 21 points from her, their second in command. And they will be seeing Green Forest, who blew past Taylor County, who was number two in the state, 64-35. And, again, wish me luck on the names here. Lana Koryanchik posted 18 points. Well, Date and Die had 13 points, and the Central Florida signee, Eric Nguyen, had 8 points. Okay, so pronunciations aside, what do we think is going to happen here? Well, it's the quick athleticism in the backcourt of Montgomery County versus the overall just imposing, ridiculous length and international roster of Green Forest. Well, Marley Bell, it feels like she'll probably win the Class A Division II Player of the Year Sandy Spiel Award. She's averaging 25 points, over 16 rebounds per game, close to 3 assists, 4 steals, and 2 blocks per game. She's a freak, dynamic athlete, great player, a very good player that has been tucked away in Mount Vernon for a while and just on that smaller side of the South Georgia coast. And she gets that help from Amir Banks, A-M-I-R-E Banks. Again, forgive me for pronunciations, but she's averaging close to 17 points, 4 rebounds, 7 assists, and close to 4 steals per game. So it's a two-man crew that does a bulk of the scoring for Montgomery County. And, of course, Green Forest, we mentioned the size and the length. Green Forest was my initial pick to win the state title after we saw, again, Southwest Atlanta Christian. They tried to get a bunch of kids transferred in. They got caught. They got kicked out. and then Green Force. They were greenlit with all their international players, and they have been the heavy favorite to win this state title. Had a couple closer calls than I would have expected early on. Schley County only beat them by 14 in the first round, then pulled away from Wilcox in the Elite Eight, 57-42, but then really put their foot on the gas against Taylor County. I'm going to go with Green Force to win this game just because of the overall size. I think that's going to really challenge Marley Bell and company as far as what they're able to do and scoring inside on putbacks especially. I think for Montgomery County to win this game, you got to get this game going up and down. You got to use your speed, beat the bigs down the floor, get some transition hoops, and I think that could help Montgomery County win this ball game. But I think if it's somehow stuck in the half court and you're going to be limiting second chance opportunities, and you're going to have Bell and Banks trying to drive and, you know, score layups over 6'2", 6'3", 6'4", girls, that is going to be a bit challenging. The three-point shot will be big here. If Bell and Banks can get hot, that could help out. But I think the overall size and length of Green Forest is just going to be a lot to try and overcome. So Green Forest is my pick to win the girls' state championship in Class A Division II. Following that will be at 3 p.m., number one in the state, Green Force, again, 26-4. They will play Region 6, number two, unranked Manchester, 20-8 overall. A Cinderella story if I've ever seen it. Manchester, how'd they get here? Well, they beat Warren County, another team that barely got into the top 10 at the end of the season. I think they squeaked in there and was playing very good basketball, coming off wins over Christian Heritage and, of course, Portal. But home court advantage goes by the wayside in the Final Four, and Manchester showed some grit and toughness to beat Warren County 62-60. Jaden Terry had 24 points in that game. And Darius Bryant, who you will see at the Sandy Spill Spring Showcase again, he impressed me last spring, last March, and I get to see him again in a couple weeks. Very excited to see him. He had 14 points for Manchester, but now they see Green for 68-44 winner over Macon County. It was a little bit closer than that, but then Green Forest really dominated to close the game and blew that game wide open. Michael Robinson had 22 points for the Eagles. Elijah Lewis and Caleb Coella, 13 points apiece. So we have Green Forest, the juggernaut, the titan, the Goliath, whatever, all the terminologies you want to say. And then you have Manchester, a team that usually is predicated with some toughness and some football players. They have graduated a lot of their size and physicality over the past 2 years with some big bodies that I was able to go see them play. I went to a Manchester game. It probably was a year, 2 years ago by now, and saw them beat Chattahoochee County. So I am familiar with the type of athleticism and talent they have on the roster. But Darius Bryant is good. He's averaging over 13 points and 9 rebounds per game. He's about 6'2", but a athletic guard that can really get downhill. And obviously, seeing by what he does on the glass, he competes. Now, these two teams played each other last year. Remember, they played in the Sweet 16. Obviously, rosters are different. Green Force, not quite as tall. They obviously do have Daniel Daramola, about 6'8", 6'7", jumping jack. But they don't have the 2 7-foot twin towers this year. And that was a game that Manchester played them tight throughout. They lost 60-56 to Green Forest. But that was one of the first signs that we saw there might have been a kink in the armor when it came to Green Forest last year. The fact that they got played to 4 points. And then, of course, they were defeated in the Final Four by Charlton County on a banked three-pointer. But Green Forest, no one has touched Green Forest this postseason. They beat Chattahoochee County by 70 points. They beat Green County by 41 points. They beat MCA by 25 points. And then even a very, very good Macon County team, they squashed them late in that game, beat them by 24 points. So no one has even really sniffed Green Forest whatsoever. I think Manchester's going to be up against it. But Coach Prather over there has done a great job. That football toughness, I know he coaches football, he's coaching basketball too, that mentality that they are going to attack. They are going to bring the fight to Green Forest, but I just don't know if they are going to have enough overall talent to beat a Green Forest team, which has just been so good this season. Even considering where they open up the season, maybe fourth or fifth in the state, they worked their way up, and they have just not even been challenged in a while, sweeping Christian Heritage, of course, and then what they've done in the postseason has been mightily impressive. I don't have the heart to pick against Green Forest. Everything on paper says that they win this game, Games aren't won on paper this time of year, but I am going to go with the Eagles of Green Force to win the state title. So now that will move us on to Class 4A to finish up Wednesday. 4A Girls State Championship, 5 p.m. tip-off. We see Baldwin, number one in the state. They were number one, I believe, all season long and for good reason, but they are finally back in Macon after seeing a state title slip through their fingers a year ago against Griffin. They're 28-2 overall. They will play the number two ranked team in the state. So, hey, we got that right. Number one Baldwin plays number two Hardaway in the state championship. Hardaway is 27-4. How did these teams get here? What happened in the final four? Baldwin just was too strong, too veteran, too tough for Fayette County. And a very impressive win considering Fayette County does have a little bit of size inside. But Baldwin, 55-32. Janae Walker, 12 points, 5 blocks, 6 boards. Cassie Neal had 11 points and 7 rebounds. And Matt St. Mary signee, Madison Ruff, tacked on 8 points, 5 rebounds, 6 steals, and 2 blocks. For Hardaway, they took care of business against North Oconee, 57-44. Michaela Johnson poured in 20 points. Akilah Shelton had 11 points, and Adasia Burrell, 9 points in that game. So, I've been on the radio in the past throughout this season with some fellows from the Columbus area that do a great job, and they were asking kind of my take on, okay, Hardaway and Baldwin, you have Hardaway number two. Like, what do you think about Hardaway's chances if they get there? I feel like Hardaway does have an opportunity. Shelton is a very good post presence at about 6'1", does a great job getting to her left hand on the low block, but blocks a lot of shots, averages 14 points, about 7 rebounds, over 3 steals, and over 2 blocks per game. But I think this game's going to come down to Michaela Johnson. If she is hitting shots, she does have that ability to really just take over with her outside shooting. Again, a big guard at about 5'11", averaging over 18 points per game. And I will say I really like the toughness of Hardaway. And when we're talking about Hardaway and Baldwin, remember, these are two Sandy Spiel showcase teams that came to Grayson in December. We saw Hardaway secure a victory over Brookwood. And then Baldwin, of course, they were able to take it to Holy Innocent. So the best of the best play at these Sandy Spiel showcase events. And we have a couple teams that will be playing this week for state titles on the boys and girls side. But this first matchup, Baldwin and Hardaway, I got to see both these teams intimately. But back to what I was saying about Hardaway, I really like their starting five. The depth is, you know, not maybe quite as strong as what Baldwin can provide. But Janaea Hardy, I really like her toughness, about 5'10". Burrell, we already mentioned, she's averaging over 6 points per game. She's just a strong guard, but she can do a little bit of everything with her toughness. You could probably kind of play her 1-3. And Lania Meeks, she sometimes falls under the radar, but she has that length, active in the paint, can score on putbacks and block some shots. And of course, when you talk about Baldwin, we already talked about Madison Ruff, who's close to 16 points per game. Cassie Neal, about 14-7. And Janae Walker, coach's daughter, 13 points, 10 rebounds per game. Baldwin is my pick, and this is a pick I had coming into this tournament. You know, looking at what I did in the Class 4A brackets, I've only missed one game in the first round. I got everything right in the Sweet 16. I missed one game in the Elite 8, and I was money on the Final Four. So I've only gotten two picks wrong in Class 4A, and it just feels like I had a pretty good hold on this. Baldwin's my pick. Baldwin's tough. I think Hardaway is very, very capable of beating them. I do think they have the talent. But at the end of the day, I think Janae Walker's just going to be too big inside. And I think even though Hardaway does have some nice length, I don't think they have that big meat and girth and that strength to kind of push Neal and push Walker away from getting their position in the paint. And if Hardaway is, you see Shelton or one of those two, between Shelton or maybe Meeks getting foul trouble, I think that could really hurt Hardaway in trying to slow down Baldwin. And I just feel like Madison Ruff has been so good this year. She's just such a good guard at getting downhill and applying pressure defensively and penetrating and making things happen. Again, I do like this game to be a good matchup, but Baldwin has been here before. You're looking at a Hardaway team that's pretty much all juniors. They're going to be back. They are most definitely going to be back, at least contending for a state title. If they don't get the job done this year, that is a really good program Coach Ellison has put together. But I just think it just feels like it is this year. It is Baldwin's turn to win a state title. They're close to home. They've been there. They lost last year, and they are re-energized to get the job done this season. So Baldwin will be my pick to defeat Hardaway in the girls class 4A state championship. To finish off that first day, Wednesday, March 6th at the Macon Centerplex, 7 p.m., we will see Holy Innocence, the number 5 ranked team in the state at 26-6 overall. They take on Region 8 champs, number 3 overall in the state, 29-3. Region 8 is pretty good. I don't know. Some people on the interwebs I've heard through the grapevine said Region 8's not very good. Region 8's really good. It's really good. I'm not going to go ahead and say I know if they're good enough to win a state championship, but Region 8 has put a team in the state championship in North Oconee. And guess what? Who did North Oconee play this year? They played Jonesboro at a Sandy Spiel event. How about that? So again, Sandy Spiel events. Really producing some very good talent, and I'm very thankful to have Coach Rick Rasmussen and his Titans in attendance, and hopefully that has prepared them for their run, and it looks like it has, because what we saw in the Final Four, we saw North Oconee barely scrape by Baldwin, a last-second putback from Kamari Brooks, who exploded for 28 points. Got the Titans past a tough Baldwin team. You also saw the freshman Justin Wise with 14 points, Justin Payne with 10, and Bird Carter with 8. But now they see Holy Innocence. 52-45 against Benedictine. Couldn't really shake the cadets the whole time. Caleb Jones had a big game, of course, for Benedictine with 20 points. But who had a bigger game? How about the other Caleb? Caleb Wilson at about 6'10", 6'11", however tall you want to measure him. 18 points, 20 rebounds, 3 assists, 8 blocks. That is the guy. That is probably right behind Ace Bailey. Caleb Wilson is hands down the next best prospect in the state of Georgia, a guy that probably will be an NBA lottery pick. That's just tough to really match up with. You saw Will Hopkins add 12 points and Devin Hutcherson 10 points and Reese Williams with 9 points and 6 assists in that win over Benedictine. So North Oconee versus Holy Innocence. How do we feel about this game? Well, I think it all comes down to Caleb Wilson. Can North Oconee attack this Holy Innocence team and just not let Caleb Wilson absolutely wreck this game offensively, defensively? He's averaging close to 21 points, 14 rebounds, close to 5 assists, 2 steals, and over 4 blocks per game. I call that a stat sheet stuffer, a game wrecker, a dominant force, and a future pro. You could use all those words to determine what you want to call Caleb Wilson. But simply put, he's very good. But he has help as well. Devin Hutcherson, sophomore, 16 points and 6 rebounds per game. And then Colorado College signee Will Hopkins has been good as well. So that is typically your big three for Holy Innocence. And Holy Innocence has been tough. You know, they secured that. Obviously, they secured that win against Benedictine, and looking at what they did, you know, they beat Whitewater 63-49. Of course, they topped Pace. That was a huge hurdle to clear in the Sweet 16, 62-58. And before that, they blew out Cedartown. Looking at the road that North Oconee has took to get here, or taken to get here, however, you know, grammar this time of year, throw it out the window. 71-49 over Lovett. They beat Central Carrollton 91-66. They beat New Hampshire 78-58. And then they just squeezed by Baldwin 65-64. North Oconee can certainly win this game. I think they have more scorers. They have a lot of firepower options with Justin Payne, all the players I already mentioned, Payne, Wise, Carter, all those guys can step outside and hurt you with the three-point shot. They move the ball very, very well. I think you're going to look for Evan Montgomery. I would even tell Evan, I don't even need you to score in this game, the 6'7 post player. I just need you to play as physical as possible underneath the basket. Do as much as you can to secure every single rebound, alter shots, and whatever North Oconee decides to run defensively, whether it's him or it's a football player in Brooks who provides a little bit more explosion and maybe a little bit more strength to maybe get into the legs of Wilson. Because remember, Caleb Wilson, he will play on the perimeter and play like a gazelle and knock down threes and do everything. So maybe Brooks draws the assignment there. Very curious to see how it all shakes out. Just when it gets to this deep in the season, you got one team that has maybe more scoring options and maybe a little bit more veteran, a lot of seniors on that North Oconee roster. But then you look at the other side and you see a future NBA player. So who are you going against? Are you going against maybe the team that has the first and third best player on the court? Or you could even argue Hutchinson might be the second best player on the court. Or do you go with the team that maybe has three through seven might have that advantage there? It's going to be a close game. It's going to be dictated on whoever has their star player shine the most. North Oconee can certainly win this game, but just this deep into the postseason and the fact that they did beat a signature program like Pace in the Sweet 16 round, it's hard to go against Holy Innocents. I'm probably going to lean that way with them just because they do have that superstar in Caleb Wilson. But if North Oconee can kind of contain him and just not let him go buck wild on both ends, maybe it's just one end of the floor and not the other, they can win. But I think I'm going to go with Holy Innocents to defeat North Oconee in what should be a very exciting game. And I know the North Oconee fans, they will be there loud and proud, and they can be really, really aggressive with their cheering. And they have a great student run Instagram page as well that really knows their basketball and will get after everybody. So it's going to be a great game, but Holy Innocents is my pick narrowly over North Oconee. On to day two of the state championships, Thursday, March 7th at the Macon Center Plex. Class 2A gets us tipped off. Class 2A, of course, just called the Final Four, so I saw these teams up close and personal. We have number one in the state, Mount Perrin Girls, 28-3 overall, versus number two in the state, Josie, 28-4. How did we get here? Josie, 45-38 winner over Central Macon. Low-scoring game. Actually, we're down 17-11 to open up, but then Josie went on a 24-6 run, led 35-23. And Central Macon just did not have enough firepower in that game. Keasia Henderson, 18 points. Carrie Fluellen had 14 points. The tandem in the backcourt, very strong for Josie to go along with everybody else in the press and using their length in spurts. Next up, Mount Perrin, 72-44. Winners over Murray County. Jessica Fields got in early foul trouble again, but did not end up hurting her. Got two fouls in the first quarter, I believe it was, but then didn't pick up her third till maybe the fourth quarter. She had 22.7 rebounds and two blocks. The Campbell signee, Ciara Alexander, 20 points, 8 rebounds, 2 blocks. Jacqueline Murthill, 19 points. So, Josie versus Mount Perrin. Mount Perrin trying for a three-peat. The big three has been huge during their postseason run. Jacqueline Murthill averaging 18.5 points per game. Jessica Fields, 17.5 points per game. And then Alexander, over 23 points per game in this postseason. Isabel Ramirez injured on the sideline, so those big three have done a great job scoring the ball. And then, of course, Catelli Uman setting them up. She dished out 7 assists in that matchup against Murray County, getting everybody involved. Oh, so Josie does have some length, athletically and length, and like eye test-wise speaking, it does look like Josie should not be overwhelmed with the height and the strength inside of Jessica Fields and Ciara Alexander. They do have great length that extends out to the perimeter as well. Shania Sanders is 5'11". You got Zamaya Jenkins, the Region 4 Defensive Player of the Year, who is having a strong season in the postseason, averaging 12 points and 12 rebounds per game. She's about 6'1", 6'2", super springy. Sanaya Hills is a 6'1" post presence. Clarissa Winfrey, 6'2" post presence that comes off the bench. So Coach Chapman has a lot of big athletic bodies that they can rotate out there to maybe wear on Mount Perrin and try to eliminate second chance points. And, you know, maybe they can wall up and block a couple shots and maybe even challenge Fields, who we said sometimes can get in foul trouble the past 2 years or this year and last year. You know, we saw it in the Final Four and state championship. She gets whistled for foul calls, and she had two quick ones against Murray County, but then was able to settle in once she got back out there and did a good job of just going straight up. Well, now she's going to go up against some teams that can maybe challenge her a little bit. And I think that will be a key game plan for Josie. Not to say just dump it inside every single time, but boy, oh boy, if you can try and steal some fouls on either Alexander or Fields, you have to feel okay about it. Well, I will also say, not just the matching up with the length and everything, the backcourt is good. The backcourt of Josie is very good. Carrie Fluellen, I really like her game. About 5'8", 5'7", sophomore point guard. You can just tell when the ball is in her hand, she moves differently. She just moves differently. She's a skilled finisher with both hands, can shoot the ball a little bit. She was really that spark plug that got them going against Central Macon, getting to some short-range pull-ups and stretching out the floor with the mid-range. She's really, really good. She's averaging throughout the season close to 13 points, 6 rebounds, 6 steals per game. She's just really all over the place, a very good player. And then Keasia Henderson as well. Remember, she was hurt last year, healthy this year, averages about 10 points per game and hands out a lot of assists. So when you're talking top four versus top four, theoretically speaking, it kind of feels like Josie can kind of match that firepower with Mount Perrin. Again, all you want this time of year is to go into a game where you're not looking up at someone and giving up 4 inches or 5 inches on every single position. Josie won't be out-athleted by Mount Perrin. I can promise you that. I think Josie's going to have to play exceptionally well to beat Mount Perrin. Mount Perrin, of course, has just seen so many good teams throughout the year. And, you know, Josie's played in that very tough Region 4 as well. But I'm going to pick Mount Perrin to win this game. That is my pick. I like Mount Perrin, and I do think Alexander's really tough, and especially if Fields, if for some reason Fields gets pushed out, Jessica has really developed a very nice mid-range jump shot, really can hurt teams from the high post and the elbow area, hit a couple of those against Murray County. But I am going to go with Mount Perrin, but again, I do feel like Josie, they do have the roster that has enough length and has enough talented guards and overall basketball skills to compete with Mount Perrin, but I'm going to go with Mount Perrin. But this will be an interesting matchup. And again, I think both teams, especially Mount Perrin, you can't get in foul trouble early. You need your best players on the floor for as long as possible. But either way, I'm picking Mount Perrin to win this one, but one that should be very, very entertaining and very exciting, and one that I will be on the call for with Class 2A. I'll have this broadcast with the great Luke Winstall. Looking forward to seeing the completion of the Class 2A season. On the boys' side, it has been an interesting ride, most definitely. We see Toombs County making it to the big dance, the big game, making history. They beat Butler 47-42. And now they will run up against Westside Augusta, 70-59 winner. Westside Augusta, that was a bit of a nip-and-tuck game. They kind of pulled away, and they were in pretty decent control for a good portion of this matchup. And, you know, it was just so balanced, Westside Augusta, trying for a three-peat now, but they're so balanced. They had 8 players score. I think they had all 8 of those players get in the book in the first half alone, so they get out and they run and gun and really attack you. But looking at how we got here, Toombs County, they beat Butler. We just said 47-42. That game was tied at 39. It was a 30-20 game in the first half. At halftime, Dominic Eason had 17 points, absolutely explosive. So happy for him that he gets to play on this big stage now, and everyone gets to see who I have been saying I think is the best athlete I've seen in the state of Georgia in my almost 10 years covering the state. He's that explosive and can do that much damage. But he really carried Toombs County, finished with 21 points. Again, they went sluggish. They couldn't score in the third quarter, and then were ended up tied at 39 with 3:59 to play. But they found ways to get past Butler. A couple guys really stepped up. You saw the likes of Mike Polk have a strong game. He finished with how many points? 8 points and 9 rebounds. Hit some free throws late to extend the lead. You saw a big basket from Parker Stanley, a little push floater in the lane to keep them ahead of Butler. And, you know, Butler, they played great defense. Give them credit. But Toombs was able to call it out. And then Westside, as we mentioned, just by committee, they got that game up and down. DeMarco Middleton had 14 points. To lead 8 scores. A.J. Jones had 11, and Dontrell Jackson had 13, Bobby Blackwell 10. So, okay, we recapped it now. So what do we see happening in this Class 2A matchup? Well, it's going to come down to defense and pace of play. Westside, if they get this game up and down in a track meet, that's going to favor Westside. We talk about their explosive scoring, 98 points on the board and a 70-point win over Cook. They beat Vidalia 67-37. Remember, Vidalia is a mutual opponent. You know, they have played both teams, and we could do the same when we talk about the route that Toombs County took, but we're not going to go through every single result. That would just be a little bit too boring. And at this time of the season, you know, what you did against one other opponent doesn't necessarily tell you what's going to happen next. But anyway, 67-37 over Vidalia, and then they beat Model 78-40 before beating Columbia 70-59. Westside is super fast. You have to play great transition defense. You cannot get beat in the transition game. They're exciting, electric athleticism. A lot of guys can finish above the rim. Jairus Adkinson had a big dunk. Of course, you see Javen Webb jumps out of the gym. Coach Hunter just has so many great electrifying athletes. And, you know, they could shoot the ball a little bit, but what they did in that matchup against Columbia, you know, Westside, they only hit 1-3. So it's a team that wants to get downhill, get to the basket. They can't hurt you from the mid-range, but at the end of the day, it's transition points and attacking the rim and knocking down free throws. Now, Toombs, I keep talking about it. They're big, but they're athletic, but they want to hunker down and stop you defensively. When they were struggling in that second half and primarily that third quarter where they just could not score against Butler, the only reason we didn't see Butler race ahead by 5, 6, 7 points and win that game is because Toombs County plays defense. And even when their offense slumped, they held Butler down just enough to win 47-42. And mind you, Toombs, they have seen Region 4. I know the state title runs through Augusta. Obviously, we're seeing it again with Westside, the two-time defending state champ, trying to make it 3 in a row. But if the route runs through Region 4, if Toombs wants to claim their first ever state title, they're going to have to do it and run the gamut against Region 4. Because what did they do after they beat Central Macon, 79-35 in the first round? They had a huge showdown with Thompson, and I felt like, okay, whoever wins this matchup should make it to the Final Four, and that's exactly what happened. Toombs down at the half against Thompson, but what happened? The defense hunkers down and holds Thompson to 44 points as Toombs puts 53 on the board. Next round, I was at that Elite Eight game. They jumped on Athens Academy early, 36-18 at the break, never looked back, 67-41 win, and then, of course, Butler. So I'm telling you what Toombs has given up defensively. The most points Toombs County has given up in the postseason was, let's see here, Thompson in the Sweet 16, just 44 points. Mind you, Thompson is a very good team. At least they were a good team, obviously eliminated now, but Thompson was a very good team this season, and they had played Westside a few times. They beat Westside 71-68 in their first meeting, then lost 55-42 and 67-41, but that's what Westside did against them. Then you check about what Westside did against Butler. Again, if this gives confidence to Toombs County, Westside lost to Butler 56-49, then they beat them 54-44. You see more of a low-scoring game. Butler beat them 53-49, but then Westside, of course, beat them 50-37. So you are seeing that Westside can be held down to some lower scoring games, but obviously they're at their best when they're running and gunning and getting after you. And Toombs, as we just mentioned, they were able to survive a low scoring game with Butler. Again, what I think the keys to the game is here, Dom Eason has to be established, and he has to be established early on. He was great at getting downhill and just simply putting his shoulder down, attacking the basket, elevating, absorbing contact, and finishing at the rim. He knocked down a couple threes in this game against Butler, hit 2 of them, just completely explosive. He's averaging over 21 points per game in the postseason. He's been great all throughout the year. You're seeing him really, really elevate his game when it matters most, and to no surprise. And then what else do you need out of this Toombs County team, the outside shooting. He needs some help because when he was held to just 4 points in that second half, we were looking around saying, who's going to score for the Bulldogs? Well, Jesus Quintero is averaging 14 points per game in the postseason. He had 7 against Butler. He is your big-time three-point shooter. You have to see him knock down some outside shots if you want to feel good about beating such an explosive team like Westside. He's going to be key. And then Demetrius Cutler, the physicality that Toombs has, they're going to have to be able to go up, rebound, and get back in transition. Demetrius Cutler at 6'4" is averaging close to 8 points and 8 rebounds. Parker Stanley, we already mentioned him, and Marion James, another big body that can come off the bench at about 6'4", 6'5", and mix things up. What I'm looking here is at the guards in the backcourt when you have Westside, when they can release Lavonta Ivory on you, DeMarco Middleton, Aldrion Jones, Dontrell Jackson, all those guys, Xavier Goss, who's more of a glue guy but has stepped up his offense a little bit, defensive guy, they're athletic and they attack you. Mike Polk and company, they're going to have to really protect the ball and be strong with it and not let Westside turn them over. Live ball turnovers, they often are converted into points this time of year, and especially Westside is very adept at doing so. I think Westside, just with the vast numbers and how many players, like we mentioned, 8 guys scored and 8 guys all scored in the first half. It didn't take them long at all to put points on the board. I think Westside might have the advantage in the backcourt just due to the pure overall numbers and how many guys that can shuffle in and out and can attack you in a variety of ways. I think Toombs County has the advantage as far as shooting the three ball, but really that's going to come down to Jesus Quintero, and if they're able to run him off the line, that could help neutralize him, make him become more of a passer, but he is a very good passer at that. DeMarco Middleton has big game experience, obviously, playing in his third state championship in a row now for Westside. I look for him to have his fingerprints all over this game. And then Bobby Blackwell, the rim protectors of Westside. Bobby Blackwell and Javen Webb, those guys can jump. They can meet people at the rim. I'll be curious to see if they can meet Dom Eason at the rim, but I know they can jump, and just judging based on what they did in that Final Four, Westside as a team, they blocked 2, 4, 6, 8 shots against a very good Columbia team. So they can meet you vertically and challenge you at the rim. My pick here, I think I am going with Westside to win this game. I just feel like they have a lot of options to score the ball with in the backcourt. I think they're very well balanced. They do have some really good athletes that can challenge things and can make things difficult. And again, if Toombs can get Dom Eason established and knock down some outside shots alongside him, I think they have a good shot. But again, I do feel like this game, whoever dictates the pace of play, if this is a lower scoring game, I feel like Toombs can win that one. But if this game is played in like the 70s and above, I feel like you're kind of leaning towards the Patriots having the advantage. I think Westside wins this game, but I do think it will be a very fun contrast of styles. And if Toombs County wins and makes history and brings a state title home to Lyons, it will be as well-deserved of a run as we have seen at this level in a long, long time. To finish up, Class 5A will close out day 2 Thursday, March 7th. We will go at 5:30 p.m. The number 2 ranked team in the state, Maynard Jackson, 28-1. They play the 4th ranked team, Midtown, 27-5. 3 of those Midtown losses belong at the hands of Maynard Jackson. Maynard Jackson sweeping Midtown, beating them 3 times. It is extremely tough to beat a team 3 times, and to beat a team 4 times, that is sometimes unheard of. And I think we've seen that in the past, maybe not so much on the girls' side, but I think didn't Berkmar beat Norcross maybe 3 times a couple years ago, and Norcross boys won that state title, if I'm not mistaken. So we have seen the tables turn when the game is on the line for all the marbles. But first, before we really dive into it, let's talk about how these teams got here. In the Final Four round, Maynard Jackson dispatched of Cartersville with ease. Shakira Cupcake Gresham with 29 points and Talia Cornish 21 points. And for Midtown on the other end, it was a little bit closer, and then they had a little bit of a run to push away from Dalton to win 73-63. Briah Lewis stepped up with 22 points, and Claire Richmond had 16. So, Maynard Jackson versus Midtown. The round four heavyweight bout. Let's look at what happened when these teams played earlier in the season. First game was a 55-47 win for Maynard Jackson. Next up, 61-58 Maynard Jackson. And then in that Region 5 championship, it was Maynard Jackson again, 56-44. Turnovers, a key storyline in these matchups. Obviously, if you have seen Maynard Jackson, you have seen just how fast and how quick they are, and they turn you over left and right. They are just extremely, extremely hard to corral and to beat with your own ball handlers when it comes to breaking the press. They turn you over. They're aggressive at the top. They just swarm, and they're very good at being active and earning deflections. And again, live ball turnovers always turn into easy layups. They are very tough to slow down. And that first meeting when they lost by 8 points, Midtown committed 29 turnovers to Maynard Jackson 7. In the second game, a 3-point loss, Midtown had 17 turnovers to Maynard Jackson's 10. And lastly, in the region championship, Midtown again, 17 turnovers, Maynard Jackson only 8. Some of the top performers in these games, I mean, you're just so balanced when it comes to Maynard Jackson. Talia Cornish is so good. She had 14 points and 6 assists in that region championship. Cupcake Gresham just plays so hard and will slash in for rebounds and play bigger than her height. She had 12 points in their first meeting, had 18 points, 7 rebounds, 6 assists in their 3-point win, and then 16 points and 7 rebounds in the region championship game. And looking at some of the top players for Maynard or for Midtown, in that 3-point loss, the one player that really stepped out and had the biggest performance out of all the games, out of all their three losses, the game that they were closest in, it was Haley Wortman, had a monster game, had 25 points and 12 rebounds. The big, tall sophomore at about 6'2". She has really come onto the scene this year, really having a breakout year, one of the top scorers for Midtown. She had one of her best games of the season, 25-12 in that loss to Maynard Jackson. She will be key. You look at everyone else, Devin Bachman's been really good. She had 18 points in that region championship loss, had 15 in that game where they only lost by 3 points. I think Sinclair Richmond's going to be a key factor with her outside shooting. And then Briah Lewis, who's a veteran on this roster, one of the lone veterans on this roster as far as, I believe, seniors go, who's really good at stuffing the stat sheet, filling up the box score. Look for her to be a key factor in this game, coming off a big Final Four showdown against Dalton, where she put up, what we say, 22 points. Again, it's going to come down to protecting the ball and not turning the ball over. Coach Martravius Little has done a phenomenal job of turning this Midtown team into a perennial winner these past 2 years. Those girls play exceptionally hard. As you always see, it feels like, you know, between them and Maynard Jackson, they're not afraid to turn it up in the press. They will attack you on defense, and they have good guards. Devin Bachman, look for her to potentially, you know, she could be a player that could steal the show. She has it in her as a sophomore. You got Kate Barden, who just hustles like crazy. Just a really good matchup. But Maynard Jackson, if they're knocking down their 3-point shots to go along with them turning over Midtown, it's just going to be tough for Midtown. You got Caden Cornish really strokes the ball. Kendi Cooper, who came in from Kip Atlanta this offseason, is another dynamic scorer. Remember what? They hit like 10 threes against Union Grove in that Elite Eight blowout, 80-55. I know Midtown is adept and skilled and good at playing fast and up-tempo, but Maynard Jackson is one of the best teams in the state at doing so. I think Midtown's going to come out and have a really good game plan, but I just feel like Maynard Jackson, it's just tough to pick them. I said whoever won that Union Grove game was going to be my pick to win the state title, and Maynard Jackson has not looked back since, and Maynard Jackson hasn't been challenged in the postseason. 80-27 over Flowery Branch, 72-45 over Kill, 80-55 Union Grove, and then 77-57 against Cartersville. Midtown has had a very strong run as well with a couple 20-point wins and then that 10-point win over Dalton. Two familiar opponents, extremely tough to beat a very good team four times. But I'm going to go with Maynard Jackson in this one. But Midtown, if they get off to a hot start, you never know. But I just feel like Maynard Jackson, they built for it. They got some kids that moved in the offseason. They had the Cornishes that have been there since day one. Gresham, of course, as well. It's just a nice blend of talent up and down the lineup, and they are fun to watch when they're cooking. So I am going with Maynard Jackson. Next up, to finish the day, day two, Class 5A boys, we will see a rematch of the state championship game a year ago. Number one Kell meets number three Eagles Landing. Kell 27-3, Eagles Landing 23-7. Eagles Landing beat Maynard Jackson 69-51. Bobby Bugs 18 points, Dwight Brown 15 points, John McQueen 10 points. Three players that were new additions this offseason to help Eagles Landing get back to the state championship game. So the Eagles very much so benefiting with the transfer wire. And you saw, you know, John McQueen again moved in very late in the season. They have not lost a game since he's been on that team. Kell 66-34 over Winder Barrow. Really just a dominant performance. Cannon Richards had 14 points and 6 rebounds. C.J. Brown going to South Florida, 13 points. Alabama A&M, Jalen Cologne, 10 points, 7 assists. List goes on and on and on. So what happened last year when these two teams met? 61-53, Kell was the victor. Remember, Peyton Marshall was on the roster last year, but he was in foul trouble, and he didn't play a whole lot in the first half. And Kell held their own and held on and were able to win, and Marshall came back in the fourth quarter and finished strong after he was maybe like minus 11 or something like that as far as plus minus goes, but finished up strong and made some key plays late. C.J. Brown had 22, 6, 5, 2, and 2 in that title game, and Richards had 11 points and 6 rebounds. Kell has been so good. Kell, talk about a team that has just been crushing everybody. The Chapel Hill 12-point win in the Sweet 16 was impressive. They beat Dutchtown by 14. What they did to Winder Barrow was impressive. Eagles Landing on the other side, they did have a bit of a hold your breath moment, 52-51 over Bradwell in the Sweet 16, but they've been really in control by double digits every game since. Kell is my pick here. I think Kell has just been so good. You got Connor Staffalores diving on the ball, on the floor for loose balls, knocking down threes. Chris McLavish moved in this offseason, another scoring guard. Braden Rouse, another piece to the puzzle. They're just very dynamic. I think this is going to be another who wants it more, a physical matchup. Look for Chris Morris to make an impact here, and Clark Maston as well for Eagles Landing. Two very good guards. Morris more so of a power wing that can really dominate physically. But Kell is my pick. I just feel like they have a little bit more cohesion maybe. They've been together a little bit longer. But this game will be a knockdown, drag them out, rock fight of a battle. Eagles Landing, Coach Montgomery's team, plays super hard, as does Kell. But I just feel like Kell, at the end of the day, C.J. Brown, I like him to make enough plays and for Kell to repeat as state champs. Day 3, March 8th, a Friday. Tips off with Class 3A, the matchup we all knew was coming at 1 p.m., number one Hebron, 29-2 versus number two Wesleyan, 27-3. How did we get here? In the final four round, Hebron Christian defeated Monroe, 97-42. A bevy of players scoring for Hebron Christian. Mia James, 24 points. Daniel Osho, 17 points. Enough to top Keandria Cree, the freshman phenom, with 18 points. Very impressive showing. They will see Wesleyan, this Hebron Christian team will. 71-57 over Carver Columbus. Joanna Porter with 18 points, Texas signee Brianna Preston, 16, and the Georgia Tech signee Chit Chat Wright with 13. These two teams met in the Final Four last year. Hebron won 65-58. Aubrey Beckham had 21 points, 5 rebounds, and 4 assists. Chit Chat Wright had 31 points. it feels like if any team or if any player would be able to will their team to victory outside of Kate Harpering, who we'll talk about in a little bit, it would be Chit Chat Wright, who has that explosive scoring, and she already dropped 31 on Hebron last year, and now she has Brianna Preston in the fold to help out as well. Those two obviously would have to have great games and would have to handle the on-ball pressure that Hebron brings with their multitude of players that they deploy at all times. I think in the paint is where Hebron would have the big advantage with Shakira Butler and Danielle Osho. Joe Potter will have her hands full battling with them, but that is a good young junior prospect that is popping up on college radars, so she has a really good opportunity to really establish herself against two other post presences that are already firmly entrenched as far as recruitment goes. Wesleyan doesn't have as much firepower as Hebron. You know, we had some players transfer out in the offseason, some injuries before the season started has really hurt Wesleyan in the grand scope of things as far as looking towards this game alone. So I think Wesleyan, you know, they have to get off to a really good start, and they're going to have to hit some shots. And Eva Garabedian, whenever she gets those corner threes, a Georgia College signee, she's going to have to cash in at every single chance they get or she gets. And, you know, it feels like Wesleyan's been picking up the pace in this postseason. You know, beat LFO 72-45, beat Oconee 46-26. Beat Cross Creek 66-44 before defeating Carver, but Hebron's never been challenged other than Pickens, which was a 82-63 matchup in the Sweet 16. So Pickens put him to 19 points. It feels like it's going to be very difficult for Wesleyan, but they do have the star power to make this game quite curious, especially if Chit Chat is going off and Brianna Preston is able to make some impact slashing to the basket. But Hebron has constructed their roster to win state championships, and it feels like they will win a second consecutive. Now for the boys at 3 p.m., Sandy Creek, number one in the state, 26-3, looking for a repeat in their own right. They play unranked Johnson of Savannah, Solsey Johnson, the correct terminology, but we have a Johnson in Gainesville and a Johnson of Augusta, so that's why sometimes you see it hyphenated Johnson Savannah. 20-11 overall. I keep picking against Johnson, and they keep proving me wrong. We saw some huge contributions in the final four round. Johnson beating Doherty, a team that they got beat by about like 18 points or so, almost 20 earlier in the season. 55-51 winner. It was Quentin James who stepped up and drew a charge late in this matchup that could have put Doherty on the line for an and-one attempt to take a go-ahead bucket, but instead it was ruled a charge. Looking at it, it looks like that was the right call. A big-time defensive play by Quentin James to seal the deal. You saw Cormari Jones step up with 18 points, 5 rebounds, 4 assists, 4 steals. Favion Kirkwood, who I said when I went down to Johnson a month ago or so to check out what the Adam Smashers have cooking, I said Favion Kirkwood is up next. He is very impressive, and I think everyone else is starting to see that now during this postseason run with 15 points and 8 rebounds. And then Josh Quarterman, 14-4-4. Looking at what Sandy Creek did, they toppled Carver Columbus with ease, 66-32. James Madison signee, Micah Smith, 19 points. Jacoby Robinson, 15. And Amari Brown, 10. So these two teams, they hooked up in the Elite Eight last year. And Sandy Creek, they jumped on Johnson early, and they did something that it seems like no one can do this time of year, is beat a Savannah team in Savannah. Extremely tough to do. Doherty fell at Savannah State just the other day. And now Sandy Creek pulls Johnson out of Savannah and will meet them in Macon. Back to that game, Sandy Creek beat Johnson 56-50. They jumped on them early, and it was just an uphill battle, but Johnson kept clawing back, scrapping back into it, but just ran out of time at the end of the day. Micah Smith and Amari Brown were difference makers for Sandy Creek, not surprisingly, with 17 and 14 points. And as far as their leading returners for Johnson, Josh Quarterman, 11 points, Favion Kirkwood, 7 points. So this game is, you know, the Goliath, the team to beat, it feels like. Sandy Creek, everyone back from last year's squad for the most part. They got length. They got shooters. They got a very good coach and Coach Nickerson. They're tough. But they're playing a team that has been playing with a chip on their shoulder all season long. They lost the 7 seed out of Region 3 to fall to the 2 seed going into the state tournament. Johnson, you know, didn't matter to them. They beat Jackson 76-50. They went on the road and beat Cross Creek 61-56. And that right there is when everyone really started to believe that the Adams Smashers could be on to something. Then Hebron has to come down to Johnson. And they dispatch of Hebron 57-50. And then most recently, they have a home game at Savannah State against Doherty, and they handled their business there. Guys are stepping up. We already mentioned Quinnen James taking the charge. Caden Davis has had some strong performances as well. And I say it every time we do these podcasts, that team runs through a brick wall for Coach Chuck Campbell. And they are on a mission here to top Sandy Creek. It's going to be very, very hard. Again, on paper, games aren't played on paper this time of year. It feels like Sandy Creek maybe should win, right? Johnson not quite as strong as last year's team. Just even if you're not even looking at it roster wise, but record wise, they were 16-11 coming into the state tournament. Last year's team, what, they only lost maybe 4 or 5 games, and they were a really strong program, and of course they still are to this day. But they don't have Antonio Baker, who was a king for that team and was really an ace in the hole for them. So Sandy Creek, they had pretty much everyone back from last year's team. Rashid Henry has really emerged as a defensive stopper, providing that 6'7" length, and has done some nice work for the Patriots throughout the season. Sandy Creek is going to be my pick. I was going to pick Sandy Creek against anybody they saw in this field to defend their state title, but they are going to have to really strap up and be prepared, because Johnson, again, with nothing to lose, they're playing with a chip on their shoulder this time of year, and they are going to come full force at Sandy Creek. Sandy Creek is my pick, but if Johnson keeps this game close and they keep hanging around come the second half, anything can happen. Next up, after the girls' three-point contest at 5 p.m., at 5:30, we have Marist, number 3 in the state, 29-1, versus number 2, North Forsyth, 31-0. 5:30 tip-off for the Class 6A Girls State Championship. North Forsyth defeated veterans. They defeated veterans in a low-scoring game, 43-33. London Weaver and Gabby Gelada had 15 points apiece. And then on the other side, River Ridge crumbled, blew an 11-point fourth-quarter lead, and let one person beat them. And that one person was Kate Harpering, who pretty much just sewed up the Class 6A Player of the Year award with 47 points as Marist stunned River Ridge in overtime, 72-69. Marist, of course, lost by, I think it was, 18 points or so last year when they hosted River Ridge in the Elite Eight, and then they turned the tables, and they were on their way to getting beat in the fourth quarter, but River Ridge not blocking out, missing free throws, and then one superstar, they just could not do anything to contain her. And Kate Harpering, with one of the greatest performances in recent memory and probably in state playoff history, with 47 points to get Marist past River Ridge. So, North Forsyth versus Marist. I think both teams really like their matchup. River Ridge was a heavy favorite coming into the state tournament as the defending state champs, a team that has so many different girls that can score the ball, balance. You know, you're starting probably 4 Division I players or so, or close to it. And these other teams, they're more fundamental as far as defense, whereas River Ridge played good defense, but offense was always going to be their calling card. When it comes to North Forsyth and North Forsyth and Marist, they are both synonymous with defense. Both have their own star player, obviously. We already talked about Kate Harpering and then London Weaver for North Forsyth. But both teams feel, I think, confident in executing and winning this game. I think both teams feel like they are the favorite to win this game. North Forsyth just a win away from going and completing a perfect season, whereas Marist only one loss on the year, and that came to Mount Perrin. This game, I feel like it's going to be a low-scoring game, right? It just kind of tends to lean that way. Both teams are very comfortable playing that defensive brand of basketball. I could see this game, whoever gets to, I don't even know if we're going to see 50, to be honest with you, but whoever cracks 40 points first could potentially win. I think Kate Harpering is obviously, and no shot to anyone else, but she's the best player on the floor. That's a five-star prospect. You saw what she did against River Ridge. There's no denying that. And I felt like River Ridge, more athletic and longer than North Forsyth, but maybe North Forsyth a little bit more sound as far as defensively speaking, possibly, maybe. But once you score more points, River Ridge, you have more possessions. Sometimes you give up more points. So either way, I feel like I'm going with Marist to stop beating around the bush. Marist is my pick to win this game. If you contain Kate Harpering, I think you win this game. If you're North Forsyth, you just can't let her go crazy, and River Ridge let her go beyond crazy. They let her go nuclear and insanity mode. But at the end of the day, that's one player that I don't think is going to be denied. But again, North Forsyth, they hit threes. They play well. Lindsay Perkle inside will play a key factor here. The matchup between her and Hannah Faklaris will be a fun one to watch as far as just sturdy role players that do their job. But I'm going with the best player on the floor this time of year, and they play very good defense. So I'm going to go with Marist to defeat North Forsyth. But again, North Forsyth, it's one player. If you can slow down one player and hold her to maybe under 25 points, you have a very good chance at winning. But if this game's played in the 40s, maybe only 20 points from Kate Harpering could be all it takes. But either way, Marist is my pick in what should be a very close, very tight, defensive-minded game throughout. Next up, Class 6A boys at 7:30 p.m. on Friday. Number one in the state, Alexander, 29-2 versus number seven, Riverwood, 24-7 overall. Riverwood, the four seed, the quote-unquote underdog here. But if you know anything about their roster, you know they just screwed up in the region tournament, but by no means were they much of an underdog in any of these games throughout the postseason. Starting on Alexander, 93-63 winner over Woodward Academy. Kennesaw State signee Braden Liu, 20 points and 11 rebounds, and Pops Dunson, 19, 5, and 6 assists. And then, of course, we mentioned Alan Stoddard out for the season. Kids have stepped up. Torian Green, 13 points. Chris Hutchinson, 10 points. And then Jermaine Freeman, who's always been one of their top four scorers, added 11. So guys are stepping up at the right time for Alexander. And I mentioned in the last broadcast, you know, you hate to deal with adversity. You hate to see one of your teammates go down. But sometimes that can just galvanize a team and recharge them and refocus them, because now they're not only playing for another state championship, now they're playing for a fallen teammate, and that can make a team even more dangerous. But that's the Alexander synopsis. When you look at Riverwood, 79-63 over Jonesboro. Jonesboro did not have a very good game. Just the stage just was tough for them. Cortez Redding played very well for them, but it was just a challenging game for Jonesboro. And give a lot of credit to Riverwood. Karis Bilal can flat out score the ball, had 30 points, and J.R. Leonard had 22 points. So, there is major, major firepower in the backcourt for Riverwood between Bilal and Leonard, who routinely combine for roughly around 50-plus points per game against Alexander. But my key question is, what are you going to do with Braden Liu? Again, Liu can play on the perimeter, but when he's really tough, he's in the paint. And I don't know what Riverwood is going to have to stop him defensively. I think it's going to come down to if – you know, they always say it's a make-or-miss league, right? It's going to come down to, is Bilal and is Leonard, are those two players, the Vanderbilt signee and then the scoring star in Leonard, who I think just got a Mississippi State offer maybe, are those guys hitting their shots? If they're hitting their shots, they can win this game, certainly. But if one of those two is sagging and not having a great performance and Alexander's able to, you know, just matriculate the ball and punch him inside with Braden Liu and Pops Dunson making plays, Alexander will win this game. I'm going with Alexander to defeat Riverwood. I just feel like they've been tough all season long. Riverwood's really, really good too. But again, it's going to come down to shot making. But if Bilal and Leonard, if they go off, they can win this game. But I'm going to stick with Alexander to repeat as state champs, with Braden Liu being the key factor in this game, with Riverwood possibly struggling to match up and stop him. Lastly, day four wraps up our coverage of the GHSA high school basketball season. Saturday, March 9th at the Macon Centerplex, we tip off with Class A Division I at 11 a.m. Number 1 St. Francis versus number 2 Galloway. It's going to be an all-region 6 affair again, as we saw last year with the boys and the girls. And we have a rematch with the girls. St. Francis 23-7, Galloway 19-10. Last year, these two teams met. It was a game that saw a lot of turnovers and also saw Galloway blow an 11-point lead heading into the fourth quarter to lose in overtime to St. Francis 76-74 in last year's state championship game. St. Francis turned the ball over 30 times in that game. Galloway had a lot of turnovers as well. But at the end of the day, you saw Samaya Wyatt was just too good, empowered the Knights with a huge performance. Game high 27 points, had 13 points in the fourth quarter, and had 10 rebounds to pair with it. Looking at Galloway, what happened last year, Tiana Thompson, 23 points, 13 of 15 from the foul line. So let's talk about how we got here again in the Final Four. This is a classification that I was on the call for. Galloway defeated Raven County 60-45. Raven County struggling to deal with the three-point line, the college three-point line. Tough to find the high school three-point line. And Galloway, they got to the foul line, and the Thompson sisters did their thing. Tiana Thompson, 28 points, 3 rebounds, 3 assists, 3 steals for the Georgia Tech signee. And Taryn Thompson, 15 points, 5 rebounds, and 7 assists. St. Francis, they gave up 2 off the tip. Athens Christian had momentum early, and then they trailed 27-16 at the half and 44-31 after 3, and then St. Francis blew them out 70-38. St. Francis got 20 points from Nia Young, Austin P. signee, Samaya Wyatt, 13.7 rebounds, freshman Gianni Rogers with 11, and Desi Taylor had 10. Well, to no surprise, these two teams have played each other before. First matchup, St. Francis only won by 1. They won on a last-second tip-in, which was quite surprising. And then they saw each other in that Region 6 championship, and St. Francis was up 20 points the entire time, won 65-49. St. Francis is my pick to win this game. I just feel like they are so big. They're so fast. Those guards are very elusive, but Cameron Golston, Nia Young, Desi Taylor, they can break you down off the dribble. Again, live ball turnovers turn into easy transition baskets for St. Francis. They really wilt their opponents with their pressure. And then inside with Wyatt, who we've mentioned, she's so terrific. Great touch from the mid-range, so she can knock those down. Amelia Bassett is a really good junior post to keep an eye on for Division I schools. I like her inside. Alaya Courtney as well. She's coming off 6 points and 10 rebounds in the Final Four. And then Gianni Rogers can step outside, knock down the 3. They just have so many options. And when it comes down to Galloway, it is 2 girls that do all the scoring for them. It is going to be Tiana Thompson getting to the foul line and Taryn Thompson creating off the dribble and a good 3-point shooter. They need other players to step up. Sophia Luis-Pierre does some nice things defensively. She gets some steals. She can knock down a 3 here and there and is a very versatile defender. Dee Stokes, I think a lot of the burden will come down onto Dee Stokes in this matchup. She is going to have to play well. She had 2 points and 5 rebounds against Raven County in a game where she had a monster size advantage. Now she's going up against an equally as big, even bigger team in St. Francis. So she won't have the size advantage there, but she's going to have to pull down some rebounds. And then, Galloway, they run a lot of good sets on offense, extremely well coached. Their defense can force some turnovers in the full court press, but it is going to come down to people stepping up alongside Taryn and Tiana Thompson. You know they're going to get theirs. Who else is going to step up? Paloma Diaz Williamson did that in the Final Four, had 9 key points. But it is coming down to who can step up along the Thompson sisters, and I just don't know if they have shown throughout the season enough consistency alongside those two. And St. Francis, I know they only play, 7 girls, but those 7 girls, they all contribute up and down the board. Take your pick as to who's going to score 15 or 20 points each night. I like St. Francis to defeat Galloway and to win their second consecutive state title. Next up on the boys' side, the Class A Division I Boys State Championship tips at 1 p.m. Number 1 Mount Vernon versus number 2 Paideia. So we had number 1 versus number 2 on the girls' side, both from Region 6, and then number 1 versus number 2, both from Region 6 again on the boys' side. Sounds like the private schools are just a little bit better than all these public schools in this classification, and we've seen it the past 2 years that the public schools just did not stand a chance when matched up with the private schools. Mount Vernon 23-9, Paideia 17-12. Remember, Paideia played a really tough non-region schedule. They had an ugly record for a lot of the season. I'm sure people that might have not been in the know were asking, why are Kyle Sandy, he's a space spill, always got them ranked? Well, Paideia is really good, and they're young, but they can beat a lot of teams. High variance level, but it has come to fruition that they are playing at a good pace right now and have not had any pitfalls. Let's talk about what we saw at Georgia College in the Final Four. Paideia, a 56-39 winner over Savannah. Savannah without Makai Joyner, their star player, who averaged 22 points per game. Blue Jackets just did not have enough offense. And C.J. Harper took over that game down the stretch. I think he had 9 points in the fourth quarter alone. Finished with 17 points, 7 rebounds, 6 assists, and 2 steals. The freshman Tristan Mitchell was fantastic, 8 of his 14 points in the first half. And then Frank Jackson added 9 points. For Mount Vernon, they crushed Mount Pisgah. They really took it to them, 77-39. They jumped out to a 15-2 lead and never turned back. The Mustangs ran wild. Shia Goba, who's just been phenomenal all postseason, has really been a revelation this year, but has cranked it up to a whole nother level in the playoffs. He's averaging over 22 points per game this postseason. He put up 23 points, 8 rebounds, and 4 blocks. West Georgia signee Xavier Chagog, 15 points, 10 rebounds. The Mustangs out-rebounded the Patriots 41-16. They absolutely dominated in the paint against a tough Mount Pisgah team that just did not have the bodies to compete with the size and athleticism of Mount Vernon. So, and KJ Garris, of course, 15 points after a scary little injury early on in the game, came out at the 15-2 mark, obviously came back and was all good in the hood. 15 points, 5 rebounds, 4 assists, and 2 steals. So, let's set this matchup up. Paideia actually beat Mount Vernon earlier in the season, 61-58. But when these two teams met in the region championship, it was all Mount Vernon, 66-48. This game is it's Mount Vernon's to lose, right? I mean, they're so strong up and down. We just mentioned all these great players. Gabe Alterman's a terrific point guard and a playmaker. He had 6 points, 6 rebounds, and 6 assists against Mount Pisgah. KJ Garris, big guard, gets downhill, can shoot the ball. Trey Scott steps outside. He had 9 points, 9 rebounds. Again, 6'10". Comparatively speaking, against Paideia, where their tallest player is about 6'3", 6'4", they just don't have a lot of size. They're pretty much, you know what, they start 3 sophomores and a freshman point guard. They're an extremely young team. They're talented, though. They're very talented. Harper is very, very good, but it just feels like Mount Vernon with Chagog and Goba and even Scott, I think that big three with their size, athleticism between Goba and Chagog, just relentless on both ends of the floor. And then Scott with that length that can alter some shots and clean up misses and stretch the floor with his 3-point shot. I just think that is a lot for Paideia to try and handle. Paideia plays extremely hard. I will give them that. They play hard. They're young. And maybe it's one of those spots where they're so young they don't know that they're not supposed to win this game and the Pythons come out and take a bite out of the Mustangs. But Mount Vernon, it would be a surprise if they lost this game. And that is to no shade on Paideia. This has been a wonderful season and a huge success, but Mount Vernon has built this roster up to win a state title, and they have everybody in place, a lot of seniors, a lot of monster talent. And I think Mount Vernon is just going to be, at the end of the day, too good and too big for Paideia. We will come back after the 5 p.m. Boys Slam Dunk Contest to see 7A action. The girls at 5:30. This is a Sandy Spiel Showcase rematch, remember? Some of the best of the best, the very best of the best, play at the Sandy Spiel Showcase, especially on the girls' side. Grayson, number one in the state, a win away from a perfect 32-0 season. They see number four, North Paulding, 25-6. In the final four round, North Paulding was able to defeat Cherokee 57-59, holding off the Warriors. Marina Cipolla, Kaden McCorvey, and Morgan Landrum all with 10 points in that game. Kaden McCorvey grabbing 8 rebounds. Ava Andrews, 9 points. Wheeling signee, Jada Jackson, 8. And Andrea Landrum, 8 points. So super, super, super balanced for North Paulding. And they are definitely going to need that against Grayson, who steamrolled the Cinderella number 10 towns, or number 10 lounge, sorry, 66-25. Georgia Tech signee Daniel Carnegie, the best player in the state, did it again with 25 points, matching Lowndes' total. 25 points, 14 rebounds, 4 assists, and 6 steals. Florida Atlantic signee Aaron Rodgers, 14 points and 18 rebounds. Nicholls State signee Malaya Jones had 10 points and 5 rebounds and 7 assists. And then Taj Hunter, 10, 5, 3, 3, and 3 blocks. So, what happened the first time these two teams played at the Sandy Spiel Showcase in front of a gaggle of college coaches? Well, Grayson really overwhelmed North Paulding. They won 75-37. Remember, a rematch of last year's postseason game where North Paulding was fouled on a desperation three at the buzzer, sent North Paulding to the line, hit the free throws to advance and eliminate Grayson and defeat them. And I want to say that might have been the Sweet 16 round off the top of my head. But with that being said, Grayson was in control, 52-17 at the half. Danny Carnegie had 17 points, 6 rebounds, 4 assists. Malaya Jones, 17 points. Aaron Rodgers, 12 points, 8 rebounds. And Tatum Brown, who's been coming off an ankle injury, but way back when she had 8 points. For North Paulding, who led them in scoring? Jada Jackson, 8 points. Morgan Landrum, 7. Kaden McCorvey, 6. North Paulding is a different team than when they first saw Grayson. They are playing so much better now. They're playing great basketball. A couple times they do like to make things interesting. They can't necessarily always pull away. You know, they were in control against Buford and let Buford come back and send it to overtime. Cherokee made it close this past round. But I guess you could say North Paulding has experience winning tight games. Grayson has not been challenged in a long time considering their postseason run and even the regular season. In the postseason, 74-50 over Richmond Hill, 76-31 over McEachern. McEachern outscored by Danny Carnegie in three quarters of work, 34 points. Grayson tops Norcross 59-38 before beating Lowndes 66-25. Key factor in this game, Ava Andrews and Marina Cipolla will be the absolute key for North Paulding. When they played their first matchup earlier in the season, Ava Andrews was held scoreless and had 1 rebound. Marina, she had 2 points in that game. Marina's been, you know, those two alone have been two of their top scorers all season long. Marina, a very streaky 3-point shooter that can pour it in and is a very solid foundational player that is getting some looks from Division III schools. And then, of course, Ava Andrews has a handful of Division I offers. Those two players are going to really have to step up for not for Grayson, but for North Paulding. And I'm mainly looking at Ava Andrews. She cannot be held scoreless and have 1 rebound, and I do not believe that's going to happen this time. I expect her to come out guns a-blazing, and it's going to have to start defensively because if North Paulding wants to beat Grayson, you have to contain them somehow. I just read off all the points. The lowest scoring game they had in the postseason was 59 points against Norcross in the Elite Eight, and they still won by 21. But it starts with holding down Grayson. You're probably not going to be able to outscore them. So if you see this game 60s or above, that's going to favor Grayson. But if you can somehow muck it up and get this game in the 50s, which is sounds kind of hard to believe with how much firepower Grayson has, maybe North Paulding has a chance to win. But Grayson is the best team in the state of Georgia. It would be one of the biggest upsets. Geez, really one of the biggest upsets we've ever seen on the girls' side of things, considering this is a top 10 team nationally. They're undefeated. They beat in this team by, what we say, 38 points earlier in the year. They're at full strength. Grayson is just rolling right now. Sounds like they're going to be rolling on into a national tournament at the end of the season if they're able to clinch this victory. I think the Rams are in line to produce a perfect season. Danielle Carnegie is phenomenal, and I just don't know how you stop Danielle Carnegie, even if she doesn't have to put up monster points, as she's so good at making others around her better. Grayson's electrifying in transition. The girls all play well with one another, and Coach Slater has won a state title already before as an underdog when he was at Lanier as a long shot. But Grayson, too strong in this game. I like Grayson to win. Which will set up on the boys' side the final game of the season, a rematch of the first game of the season between these two teams. Number one Grayson versus number two McEachern. Grayson 29-2, have not lost to a team in the state of Georgia, versus McEachern, who is 26-5. These rosters are a little different than at the beginning of the season. John McQueen jumped ship and is now playing for a state title at Eagles Landing. And McEachern's had some guys come and go in the offseason. But the one piece that you need, the only one that you need, is Ace Bailey, who is averaging over 32.5 points, 15.5 rebounds, close to 4 assists, and just a shade under 3 blocks per game. So you're talking Ace Bailey, Rutgers signee, probably the best player in the nation. 32.5 points, 15.5 rebounds, close to 4 assists, and close to 3 blocks per game in the playoffs. In the Final Four, we saw McEachern defeat Wheeler 63-56, and Ace, you know, put up those numbers, 32 points, 15 rebounds, and 3 blocks. And you saw Dozy Onyerimba, the hard-playing forward, a triple jumper, put up 11 points and 9 rebounds. Next up, we saw Grayson defeat Milton 57-40. Amir Taylor, 13 points, 8 rebounds. Purdue signee Ja'Kari Harris, 12 points, 10 rebounds, and 8 assists. The first time these two teams played, first game of the season, Grayson took it to McEachern 79-62. They fired on all cylinders. Ja'Kari Harris had 20 points, 4 rebounds, 6 assists. Anthony Alston, the App State signee, pitched in 17 points. Amir Taylor went to work inside with 16-7. And CJ Hyland, who's going to Western Carolina, had 15 points. So you had 4 explosive performances in double figures. And for McEachern, you saw Ace Bailey put up 29 points. Well, Grayson is the heavy favorite. They've done a great job handling the target on their back their entire season. You know, nobody from Georgia has beaten them yet, but they've had their eyes set on this potential matchup, I am sure, and I am sure that it will not be a 17-point game. I would be hard-pressed to believe Ace Bailey would let the Indians get blown out on the big stage in his final game. Grayson, of course, they have all the roster, all the pieces are there. Didn't even mention Ahmad Clark, who can really play. Just top to bottom, Grayson is built for it, one of the very best teams in the nation. But it's always challenging this time of year to win a state title with the target on your back as the favorite in Class 7A, having never won the state title before. McEachern with Ace Bailey and Jay Nash, a very good playmaker. Got to get some help from other guys. Jaden Bynes, a good sharpshooter to keep an eye on. I'm going to go with Grayson, though. They've been the best team all year long. I think Coach Joffrey Pierce is due to get this monkey off his back. And I foresee Grayson, the Rams, sweeping the Class 7A state titles and both of those teams advancing to hopefully play in the national tournament, one of these national tournaments, after the GHSA season concludes. So there you have it, folks. All your bulletin board material. It's been a long run. It's been a lot of talking on these podcasts. It's not always my favorite thing to do. You know, I only get to pick 16 winners this time of year. So I had to pick a lot of losers. Only 8 boys teams and 8 girls teams I get to pick to win a state championship. And it's never fun picking against people. But there you have it. I will be on the call for these 7A state championship games on the NFHS network. I'm in charge of 7A and 2A. Check that out. Macon Centerplex will be rocking, I'm sure. Looking forward to it. And again, thank you everybody for following along during this Georgia high school basketball season. Can't do it without the support of you all and the listeners. It's been a great run. And I can't wait till next year. I'm sure it'll be here before you know it. And with that, for the last time, this is Kyle Sandy of SandySpiel.com signing off for the 2023-2024 GHSA high school basketball season.